What are you anticipating seeing, you know, amongst the New Zealand teams, given you've given all that about the All Blacks?
Just so many good young players, mate. I don't know how you do it, mate. Oh, I do, because you've got three of the biggest academies in the world. Fiji, Samoa and Tonga. They're not bad.
We were waiting for it.
I was waiting for it.
G'day, good evening, good morning. It is dropped kickoff time once again. I'm Nick Wasiliev. I'm joined by Josh Murphy and Nathan Williamson to talk about the last fortnight of Super Rugby. On top of that, some Six Nations has come and gone. We've also got, you know, Six Nations, the Women's Six Nations, Super W starting. There's a lot happening in the world of rugby. But before we begin, I also just want to throw out a small apology, just like a housekeeping announcement. We at the drop kickoff are very sorry. Our Twitter got out of control, on the weekend. I have had a conversation with New South Wales police. We need to find the man responsible. This is a Tolu Latu free space. You are in a safe space here this evening. The police don't know who is responsible, but they think his name is similar to Brick Dartman. Something along the lines of Brick Dartman. So if you see someone called Brick Dartman, call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000. Just be careful. This man is going around. This is a Tolu Latu free space right here. And I just want to make sure that we are all comfortable and on the same page. It's very important.
He's very, very easy to spot. He's got a Waratahs jersey with one signature that looks very familiar to that Waratahs soccer. What's his name? Can't remember.
Can't remember. Don't know who he is. We just want to make sure that we're all safe here. This is a safe space, and we conduct ourselves in a professional manner in this podcast, without a doubt. But lads, rounds 3 and 4 of Super Rugby, there's a lot to digest. There's a lot to talk about here. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel, particularly after round four, there were a lot of games that got away from us. It was kind of the round that got away with those three losses in NZ, because it looked like the teams were performing and they had a chance to win all three of those games, and then whatever reason fell up short. Before we dive into each club, and how they've gone over the last fortnight, I want to pick your brains both about how do we feel? Is there worrying signs right now for Australian Super Rugby sides? Napa, I want to hit you up first. What are your thoughts?
Firstly, the Brumbies are the standout by a long, long way.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They are genuine title contenders that people aren't talking up enough. Like, they can match it with the Chiefs. They've showed they match it with the Blues in round two and have kind of backed that up against the Reds and Moana Pacific over the last 2 weeks. So they are genuine title contenders with the depth they have. Mm. As for those below them, God, I don't know. It's so inconsistent. It's, you know, the Reds looked competitive against the Brumbies and then squeaked home against the Drua. With the quality they have, they should have put them out. But it's the old thing of styles make fights, and the Reds' style just allows the Drua to come back and just put unnecessary pressure on them. You know, the Waratahs, again, with all the quality in the team, you'd think should be doing a lot better. But realistically, it's that loss against the Rebels, which is the deciding one. Their credit to Rebels. They just wanted it more. They, you know, it was just as simple as that. And then, you know, the loss to the Hurricanes, the disappointing one. But, you know, they've got a serious chance of being 1-5 when we probably come back in 2 weeks' time. But again, the joy of the season is you can qualify with 5 wins. They all have to do is get hot late, but they need to turn a lot of things around. The Rebels, as we said, putting it together, actually looking quite good. You know, probably the biggest surprises of 23 from the Australian teams. Still with Kellaway to come back in, not next week, but the week after. No, not this week, but the week after. Leota and Philip to come back towards the end of the year. So they've got Cavalry coming back. So positives there. And the Force. Oh, my goodness. God, like, I honestly kind of sat back and thought, and I'm pretty sure I said 2 weeks ago, you know, however they responded against Mana was going to be a sign of what type of team they have. And, you know, they gutted it out to get that win. But goodness me, they let one slip as we're recording on Monday. So this afternoon, against the Highlanders, they should have got that game done. My goodness. It's one of those things. Yeah. If you want to be competing for a top 8 spot, Realistically, the Highlanders are a team probably going to be on that bubble, given the way they've started this year. They're going to be a team that's going to be right around that eighth, ninth position. You have to win games like that. The fact they couldn't, with everything that happened, including Frizzell being out, including, you know, all the late illnesses, the fact they had a lead late, or lead with 30 minutes to go, God, that's frustrating. But again, I think it's clear. Brum's on top, and then an absolute mess from second to fifth. From an Australian perspective.
Yeah. Mr. Murphy, I appreciate that you and I are both having a nice drink this evening. You are on the Corona, I am on the wine. Is this a suitable reaction? Are you feeling similarly kind of worried, or are you kind of also a little bit, there's like some good, some bad to take from these last few weeks?
I think the goods are we've got some new bolters coming through that I think can really do some damage in the future of the Wallabies. And I think that's something that we definitely need to keep taking on board and watching the Wallaby space. But as a team as a whole, with Nathan, totally agree. Brumbies stand out. If they're not serious contenders or in the final this year, I'd actually be a little bit surprised. And really, that's just because the consistency is key. They consistently play up-tempo and then structure. And then they go back to formation. They play the game that's in front of them. Then they dwindle it down to their own structure, and then they control the game. And, you know, this weekend just passed. What an amazing, it was 14 tries, I think it was, in the game. You know, now, you know, we're starting to look at running rugby again. It's extremely exciting. And to see the Brumbies, you know, really, really put it to themselves to really hold their head high and do their job. Absolutely love it. Everyone knows in this podcast, I am an absolute Reds fanatic, and it's a terrible thing to be a part of, and I understand that. but I own it, and I will still tell you that I am. I honestly think they should have lost that game. There is no reason why they should have kept that win. And I think there's a few key areas in that game that have really, you know, let's be honest, pissed me off. The first thing is when you take O'Connor and O'Connor can't convert any more than 47% of his conversions, why the hell is he the first kicker, regardless of selection? You know, like those points, I believe there was like three missed conversions there. Simply, there's another 6 points. Two. Thanks, Nathan, for the correction. Thought you were doing something else on the camera there, but I'll take that. You know, but again, there's 4 points, so it's not a three-point win. It's a seven-point win, right? Big difference. Like, we need to make sure that we're closing out what we do all the time, not having to scrape by the skin of their teeth, right? And then that falls down to discipline as well. And we're seeing it across all of the rugby teams at the moment for the Australian sides. The discipline is ridiculous. There are too many penalties. They're not getting back. The quick taps are killing us. All quick taps against us right now, and the Australian teams are absolutely destroying us because no one's reacting to simple get back 10 metres. And, you know, we start to see the ramifications of it. We've seen yellow cards. We've seen yellow cards to red cards. We've seen penalties galore. It's just frustrating as fuck. I'm sorry to say it, but, you know, I think that as a stone cold rugby fanatic that I've self-proclaimed, obviously few people on the other hand agree, but you know, we need to just make sure that truly we start getting those fundamentals right. Simple game management, simple smart playing rugby, and listen and watch the referee. You know, it just pet peeves of mine in basic rugby, and as a coach, you know, I drill it into my players in clubland, let alone watching the super teams do it.
Yeah, the amount of debates I've had with people saying, oh, we're just not good enough. First of all, I hate that argument. It is clear by a lot of those games that we are good enough because we're competitive for all of those games. We had a chance to win a lot of those games, but the simple truth is that, again, you've nailed it, Josh. It's those small little rugby brain moments. I think you were talking about it beforehand, before we started recording. It's where's the rugby brains? In a lot of these teams, where is the rugby, like the actual thinking, less like, you know, got to do this or present this, and thinking, no, how do we actually win this game of rugby? You play the opposition, you also play the ref, and you're smart about it. And let's dive into each team, and I feel like it is best to start with the Reds. You know,
why
and,
do you do
and...
this to me?
Why, mate? Rip the bandaid off,
mate. We have to rip that with. We have to rip the Band-Aid off. Well, also just because I think this could also be therapeutic for you, man, because like I'm completely in agreement with you as to how the last weekend played out. But look, last time we were here, you know, the Reds had just come off a, you know, 50 plus point drubbing of the Force. Then they go to Canberra, lose by six, pick up a losing a bonus point against the Brumbies. And then they go a first game at home, just managed to sneak home a win against the Drua. So they're 2-2 for the season so far. And I think this is one of the rare instances where you actually think that the team, I actually think the team played better in the game that they lost than the game that they won. Because it seemed like such a different side to the team the side that went to Canberra and were looking to try and win that game compared to the side that in that last half an hour of the Drua match, I turned the game on and it was 24-3 at the 50 minute mark. And I thought, oh, this is good. There's an opportunity here for them to really make a positive statement. And then it was just penalty after penalty after penalty after penalty to the Drua. And it was just like watching a house of cards falling. And you are right. They were lucky to win that game. Josh, I don't want to say that is this just another, like, it felt like I've been watching a lot of Reds games of the previous couple of years where the discipline is killing them. They should be a side that should be challenging for the title. They have the talent to do that, I personally think. And you may disagree. But what is with this discipline situation? Particularly, you know, this is the sixth season under Brad Thorne. Surely they would have figured this out by now.
Look, first things first, they definitely have the talent to win. They are the Reds. They can win if they want to, right? But this is the thing, right? It's if they want to. And I think the hardest part that we need to really assess here is what's the disciplinary areas that are killing them. And, you know, the offside penalties, the infringements of the breakdown from secondary contesting when they shouldn't be, not rolling away. Some of the basic works need to be improved. But it's also they need to keep the tempo up. People bring up, I think you did as well, Nick, just a bit earlier before the recording. Is it a conditioning thing? I don't think it's a conditioning thing. I think it's a brain thing. How many times do you know that the guy inside you has to be in bloody position, right? We've all played the game. We love the game. We do this because of it. And, you know, but Christ, it's not hard to tell your mate to get back a step. It's not hard to be accountable and actually hold yourself in a presence of a game to continue to move forward at the right pace. You know, you can see it. We make the shooting tackles, we're getting in there, or, you know, the 20-30 channel, we're getting pulled offside because all we want to do is hang there and not get back. Like one of the offsides that we had on the weekend, he didn't run backwards into the line, reset, reload and go. He turned around, faced his own goalpost, and then heard the footsteps of the Drua coming, turns around and makes a tackle and gets pinged for offside. Like, it's simple rugby. This is the thing that does my head in. Simple rugby. And Thorne is a simple rugby man. Thorne was not flashy when he played. He was just a hard, hard man. And he brought that to the Reds. And, you know, when it was just the Australian teams and, you know, COVID was impacting, he really started to build that hard-headed rugby. And then the expansion comes back to standard play, standard teams. They just can't keep it up there. And I don't know whether it's because the head of the teams, you know, the O'Connors, you know, like those sort of players are just coming back in. Those sort of players are just starting to get their way back with the team. Is it too many changes? Like, how do you change it, right? Like, somebody give me the bloody answer, please, because then if I can get it, at least I can try and contact them and tell them what to do, because it's just frustrating as hell now.
That's the best way to put it. It's just frustrating. Like, as you said, there is a bevy of Wallabies in that team. And, you know, the whole thing with the start of the season was, well, they're going to be out Tani Aotearoa, how do they manage? I think in terms of go forward, they haven't liked it. It's just, I say, it's that discipline that has just let them down. They just, and simple stuff. It's not, you know, and the stuff you would have been drilled into as a kid just to do. But outside of that, there are still positives to take out of it. I think I have been enjoying watching Liam Wright getting back to actually playing, you know, full 80 minutes. I think he's been a solid contributor for him. A lot of young kids coming through. Your Josh Flukes of the world, even Taj Annan. How he's 19 is beyond me. He looks like he should be 25. He's massive for a 12. Again, it's going to be great for the junior Wallabies when that under 20s world champs comes up. So there are positives. And, you know, we are that critical after. If it's still one, that's the thing. Other past Red teams have thrown those games away. So that's a step forward. But it's just kind of a sign of this is our expectations for the Reds. You know, enough, it's enough. We've seen no far too many collapses, far too many you know, look good to start the season and then just fall away. Like, no, this is a team stacked to Wallabies. This is, it's now or never. You've got to perform, otherwise, you know, what happens next year? Does Vunivalu stick around? Does Harry Wilson's off contract? Is there potential he goes overseas? How much of this kind of roster sticks around? How much do, you know, Taniel Tupou's already gone? You know, it's one of those things. This is it for the Reds. This is, you know, Brad Thorne's off contract. We need, it's now, as I said, I'm kind of repeating myself, but that's it's just that. It's now or never for them. And if we can't see an improvement in the next month where they are properly knocking off teams and, you know, the next two games of Rebels and Crusaders, that's going to be a pretty big indication of where they lie, that they've got problems if they can't get results out of at least one of those games.
They've got to close it. They just don't close the games. They leave everything open for chance. You know, the sickens me to say it, but look at the Brumbies. They close the bloody game off. Like, if you can do anything, take it from another Australian franchise and say, okay, how do you do it? Ask the question. Find it. In the end of the, you know, it's in the spirit of the game. Just why not start to do it?
Yeah. I think I feel like we're just sounding like unbelievably critical of the Reds because they do have it in them to turn it around. But maybe it's also because we've seen so many of these seasons before in the last couple of years. And you just, even though they got the win against the Drua, you just know that that sort of performance is not going to cut it when you face a Crusaders side.
Like, we see so much in this team. It doesn't come out of a place of, God, this team sucks. It comes out of this team. We've seen these individuals fire throughout Super Rugby over the past 2 years. Mm. But we just want to see them doing it against Kiwi sides. We want to see that finally all come together. That's all it is.
Mm. 100%.
Yeah. So, look, it's a weird place to find yourself if you are, you know, if you are a Reds fan. Josh, I sympathize deeply with you.
Don't say that while you smile and laugh at me. It's okay. I get it. I'm one in a million. But I do love them. And it's true. It comes from the heart. It doesn't come from anger.
It's true. Well, let's talk about a team that we think is doing a little bit more positively, and that is the Rebels. Because, you know, I think when starting this season, I personally was not, you know, hiding the fact that I had a lot of trepidation about how the Rebels were going. There was not a lot from Kevin Foote's first year in charge that gave me a lot of confidence. But, you know, ever since that second half against the Hurricanes, even though they went down in that game, there is something to this Rebels side, that there is something starting to click. There's a bit more of a cohesion, of a building of some confidence, I think. Though you lads may disagree. Round three, so grab the first W of the season with a win against the Waratahs, 34-27, at Amy Park. But then, round four, going over to Waikato, playing probably the pace setters, arguably the pace setters of the comp in the Chiefs. I'm really frustrated with this game. Of all the games this weekend, I wasn't expecting us to win this game. But when you have a start like the Rebels have, I got quite frustrated that we weren't able to continue on and produce an 80-minute performance to really push this Chiefs side. Nathan, am I being too critical of this Rebels team?
I think a little. Like, I mean, they're coming off that Waratahs win, which, God, that was a great performance. Like, they got that dog in them, the Rebels. That's the best way to describe it. They just keep fighting and fighting and fighting, and they outworked the Waratahs team that made a name off that last year. As the Chiefs one, I mean, there's a reason they're top of the ladder. They're stacked. They are stacked with talent. And ultimately, it's just that 10 minutes before and after halftime, God, it just seems to just undo teams. That seems to undo Australian teams especially. But you know what? I still come away with that game looking at positives. You know, Rebels weren't at their best. They kind of, the attack fell apart, particularly in that kind of second quarter. They, you know, lost some key figures, but there's, you know, Carter Gordon looks like, honestly, the form 5'8 in Australian rugby. Is that too hard to say?
Agreed. No, completely agree. He is 100%. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Like, he probably would have been fifth or sixth on the list when you consider like preseason rankings, probably had O'Connor, Edmund, Donaldson, Lalesio. Who else am I missing?
I think you're putting Alessio a bit far down the list there.
Debrezzini's ahead of Alessio.
No particular order. This is no particular order. So he's probably came in fifth. He's come out looking the best. Brad Wilkin, why we're not talking about him as a Welby's Bolter enough? He's insane. He's so good around the breakdown and tackles everything that moves. Pono Farmacilli, great impact off the bench. If he can get more of a starting role, he's going to be a flyer. And you guys like, you know, young guys like your Trevor Hosiers, even someone like Lockie Anderson, someone who we didn't really talk about that much being as key out last year, but was one of their best players in that win over the Waratahs. And then finally, Richard Hardwick. Jeez. Like, in terms of a breakdown killer, like, he's come back from Namibia. Still can't pronounce it. I don't think I ever will.
Namibia.
That team in Africa that's not the Springboks. Since he's come back from them, basically, he's become an absolute killer. And he's shown enough that, you know what? Well, I think that's really missing in the past is they've had all these big-name Welbies, but there's been nothing around them just to kind of add that extra quality. You now have that. So by the time Kelly comes back for that Drua game, when I think Leota's back last month, the regular season, Philip probably same time, they find themselves around a top eight position. Got a lot of quality coming back in. Like, they can really kind of trouble some teams. I mean, you look at the last four games, Waratahs, Highlanders, Western Force, Brumbies. Think of those, that Highlanders Western Force game. If you're getting, you know, three Wallabies back for that game, that could cause some real damage and all of a sudden be that shock team in the top eight. So, I think yes, we're being harsh after the Chiefs loss, but it's more positive than negative.
100%.
Maybe so. I personally am the opinion, Josh, you may disagree, but like, what does success look like, particularly for, you know, a team like the Rebels and the Force, who outside of Super Rugby AU have actually never made a Super Rugby Pacific, like, they've never made finals ever. And for me, success is actually getting that maiden finals berth. And this Rebels side really have got something in it to do that. And you make a really great point that there's so much talent coming through. Josh, how gutted are you that Carter Gordon is not in a Queensland red shirt?
Oh, look, let's not go there. We're going to let bygones be bygones and hope to God things change in the future. Maybe we could have swapped Taniela, you know, somewhere else and then paid for Carter to come. No, but obviously... Look, I think the thing for me with the Rebels is that they're now a team of leaders. They're not individual leaders. There's not one person running the show. There's not one person busting their ass to get the job done. They're all putting their hands up now. You know, Nathan's rattling off names. Hardwick, Wilkin, Gordon, right? Look at Hodge. Compound fracture. That doesn't fucking tickle. I don't care what anyone says. That is just not a pleasant experience for anyone. However,
piercing the skin as well. Like,
yeah, it's delicious, right? It makes for good soup. No, but like the thing is, like, what we've got to really look at is that there's now a team of leaders, and you really see that happen. You see that someone random stands up and does something that they didn't do last season. And it's across the board of the team. Now it is a team of leaders that just need the cohesion to finalize things, deal with the adversity, keep moving forward, and really put the foot to the throat. And they're almost there. You know, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if this is their maiden finals. I think that this is something that they can really put themselves into contention for, you know. Sadly, I can also see the fact that they could be top four. I could see it. If they do the right things and get the right points rest of the season, rest of the games, right, and they start continue to do the work, there's no chance why they can't work themselves up and get them in the position. Like, oh, you know what I'd love
do
to see?
Do we have to drug test you? Yes or
bold,
no?
Hey, that's a bold claim.
Do we have to drug test
you? Hey, no, but you think about it, right? Out of all the Australian teams right now, excluding the Brumbies, because obviously the Brumbies are doing a fantastic job in playing to, you know, what we've previously discussed, which we'll talk about a bit later. But what they're doing is they're staying in contention bar a few silly mistakes and silly areas that if they can fix that up, it changes the whole attribute of their game. And then all of a sudden, they're really pressing. They're really putting the game into motion. And I love the way they're playing their game right now. Like to be fair, they're my favourite Australian team to watch at the moment.
Wow, that's like fair, even more than the Brumbies. Are you just like, is what? Why is it just because you're appreciating the actual effort? It's the effort that the each player is putting in. Like you can see that this is a 100%. Team that really cares.
I can't see a player that's not trying to pull their weight. There's moments where they make mistakes and there's moments where something happens and it goes against them, but they're all trying to pull their own weight. They're all attempting the breakdown. They're all attempting strong defense. They're all making impact off the bench. It's just silly little things that are hurting them. And if they can just get that mentality to rectify that, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm an old Stephen Larkin fan, running tens, ball, hard line running, offloading, distributing when it's required. Carter Gordon with the beautiful hair that he has, but he just reminds me of Larkin. Like it just reminds me that what running rugby can really do. And I think the game now really suits him with these changes, and it suits a team like the Rebels, right? So yeah, that stand by it. I truly think that they are my favorite team to be watching at the moment in the Australian Conference.
Yeah. I can understand that. And also the fact that in the next, you know, fortnight or so, they've got the Reds at home. And we know that the Reds, are, as we've already discussed, are kind of misfiring right now with some of the kneecapping that they have on themselves, but can be a very imposing, strong team if on their day. But then they've got to go and face the Drua in Fiji, which even the Crusaders weren't able to overcome that. But plenty of Aussie teams have gone over to Fiji and won. So there is potential
that's
there.
That's a game for me. That's the game. If they come back with a win in Fiji against Fiji, legitimate, like they're a legitimate side. I don't care what their 1-3 record says right now. Like that's a tough place to win.
Mm.
Mm. You won't be asking me for a drug test again, will you?
I know you too well. I'm asking for one regardless.
Well, look, drugs aren't good, guys. You should contact Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000.
If you hear Latu getting streamed down the street, just run, guys. Don't stand there. It's call and report. Do not engage.
Well, look, I think it's good to see that the Rebels are on their way, and some bold predictions there from Mr. Murphy. We'll keep the breathalyzer stacked away until later in the season. But continuing in the mixed vein that we are currently feeling right now with our Super Rugby sides, let's head over west to the Western Force, who I guess to say have kind of similarly probably sum up the feeling that we have right now. Great potential, but just clearly not reaching the scales that we really hope that they would. Really, if you are a Force fan at the moment, it's not looking too bad. They're 2-2 after round four. They're still, you know, in the top. I think they're still in the top, you know, top eight. They're still in finals contention. You know, they recovered after their big loss to the Reds with a 21-18 win over Moana Pacifica. But then they went down over the weekend, 43-35 to the Highlanders in New Zealand. And the Highlanders previously were 0-3. Josh, I'm going to throw to you first for this one. And again, I'm sorry to be, you know, throwing you into the mud. But
all right, I get it.
it's a cruel world, I'm sorry. But I'm getting the sense that all three of us are feeling like the Force are underachieving right now. Would you agree?
I don't think they're underachieving. I think that they're just, I don't think players are in the right positions in the back line. I think there's some room there for development and pulling in other players that would better attribute to them to having more of an attacking back line. I think that's something that they would really be able to utilize. You know, I haven't seen it yet. And, you know, maybe that's because I'm not paying enough attention to that game particular at the time. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Stewart jumping into 10, putting Hegarty into 12, and seeing that option of having a bit of a, again, I know it's a fan favorite of mine, ball running 10. But I think that, you know, the point here is that they're putting in an effort, but it's not enough. The effort isn't adequate to the caliber of rugby that they're currently going up against. And I think that there's just that room for improvement on that. You know what? I'm still loving watching them. They're still having red hot cracks. There's still some good flair in there. And I think that flair is really what's giving them the edge at certain times of the game where they're sort of, throw the kitchen sink at them and they're trying to do it. But there's just a few other parts of the game and you know, we'll always say it, and I've said it tonight on other teams, discipline, right? Discipline's a key area. Do we laugh? Do we cry? When you come on for a couple of minutes, you do a lifting tackle and then you send. Like, I get it. You're enthusiastic. I get it. You want to have a crack. I get it. But guys, like the highest, what would you call it? Viewed, interpreted, absolutely under the microscope component of the game is dangerous contact in any way, shape or form. And you do a lifting tackle above the horizontal and then you follow through with the drive. Like he would have been better off just to drop him in that situation, honestly. But he didn't. And I just think that there's just room for that improvement. And but, you know, still love the enthusiasm, still better than league. So I'll keep watching the Force and making sure that they're punching forward. But, yeah, I don't see them making the finals at all this year. Well, I see improvements. I see potentially a better win-loss ratio than what it was normally expected of the Force over previous years' performance. But, yeah, that's sort of where I stand. I don't have too much on it because I just can't see myself personally where these great attributes can really come from. I think as a team, they've just got to take a leaf out of other books right now and just try to create that platform a bit better.
Is there any particular reason why Passatoa isn't playing? Is he injured right now? How long is he out for?
The season. So essentially what happened is going into the season, he basically suffered a really bad knee injury. And it was like it's September last year that I think it was like an ACL or something along those lines, his knee. So if he's back, he'd be back for the last couple of games, but haven't heard anything since.
Mm. The reason why I ask is going off of Josh's point, like I do feel like that whenever I look at the squads that have been announced for the Force, I have questions about who is which particular people are here or here. They do have I personally am of the opinion that the Force should be making finals. I think that there is enough in that squad to do it. And on top of it, also, I just hold Simon Cron to a standard of someone who should be able to get this team to a maiden final because he will not take, a loss that they had, for example, to the Reds, and just say that that is acceptable. He will demand higher quality of this team. Natho, where do you think the Force are sitting right now? Because I think especially that Highlanders performance, I guess you could say that that one was definitely a one that they should have won, surely.
That was one that 100% got away from them. I think they're in a really awkward situation. Like they're not exactly playing the best – didn't play the best rugby against Rebels and Moana, but got away with wins, something they missed last year. But they got a tough next 2 weeks, Blues, Hurricanes, away in New Zealand. That's going to be such a tall order. But there's still positives. Like, let's not drown that down. Firstly, Simon Cron's black book is incredible. Like, firstly, Rabone, how the hell they didn't have him signed down to a contract is beyond me. Secondly, Gareth Simpson, where the hell did he come from? One of these guys from Wasps that they just kind of, that Saracen signed and then the Force lined in. He looked really good in that first half. Like, he gave, honestly, it was a real point of difference for him and is, you know, a bright spot for him. I think they just need to stay healthy now. I mean, they lost Tom Robinson to a concussion, which, again, hurt their claims, hurt any chances they had. Flaufan Gutter's got an ongoing Achilles issue. He's just going to kind of manage, which, again, if you get those two on the field, you have a world-class front row. It doesn't matter, you know, that gets you go forward you need to, whoever's at 10 or 12, just to kind of, that gives you, you need creativity, but it makes life so much easier when you have a four-back that's actually moving forward. So the likes of Kibariki, Manasseh Mateeli, Tony Pulu, like they've got some serious weapons out there. It's just, I think their trick is how do we utilize it? How do we kind of get through these next 2 weeks against two absolute killers in New Zealand and with some positives because, like, they've got a good run home. Like, they just I think they outside these 2 weeks, they've got one trip to New Zealand, and that's it for the last 10 weeks. So if they, it's all about just building momentum at this point.
So can I pose a question to you both? Mm-hmm. I would like both your interpretation of this. Do you think their recruitment drive is that bloody good that they don't understand the team they're putting on paper?
In regards to?
Selecting a team for game day, regardless of who's available and who's not. But they do some pretty good recruitment. They have some pretty good talent within their roster and their wider team. Like, do you think they struggle sometimes with the old just pick the same guys because you know they can play rugby and they don't utilize their team to full capacity or their playing squad?
I think they're starting to do that. I think apparently Simpson has been in that preseason squad for 2 months now. Like, why it took him 4 weeks for him to start when I reckon he's their best half is beyond me. I think it's also that they've dealt with a lot of injuries and just trying to deal with those combinations, still figure out what works. I think they're all just trying to throw it all together and it's just not working. So I think next 2 weeks what they need to do is just really find some continuity in selections and just kind of, as you said, find something that works and just stick with it.
I think there is an element to that, but I also think, Josh, that the Force really are probably ever since, you know, they had Global Rapid Rugby, they had to put together a squad very, very quickly for that makeshift competition that was being made. And then all of a sudden, within the space of a few months during the pandemic, they were back in Super Rugby and have basically been spending that entire time since then trying to build the squad back up to, you know, a level that's competitive enough to play in that competition. Part of me thinks it is that they do have the recruitment and they have the money to throw around to get the talent in there. But it's a simple case of the fact that you do have some good leaders in there, but it does feel like there's a brand new squad taking the field, you know, every year. There hasn't been a chance for a lot of cohesion yet in that side, I think. Because off the back of that, and maybe they're starting to get settled now. Maybe they're starting to kind of finally find that base line of kind of, okay, well, this is the starting side or the side that has actually had some game time together. I mean, how much were we talking last year about the fact that how many Argentinians were in that four squad? All of them are gone now. The only one who's left is Medrano. That gives you a sense of the turnover rate and the talent they bring in and pull out. So I think it's been a case of just the fact that it's been such a couple of chaotic years for the Force that they actually, this is probably the first or second year of them actually kind of being settled as a squad and building up from nothing. I think that also plays a factor.
That's definitely a glass half full approach. I like that. I really do. Whether I can agree with it or not, I'm not sure. You know, how long's a piece of string? When are you willing to cut it? I think there's just a few things within that recruitment and then team building component that the Force could really benefit. So, you know, and for the guys that have the inside knowledge out there that are listening to this pod, who's really coordinating the team selections together and having as much influence together? Like, I'd like to throw that out there. Who really has the most influence to solidify that who they're recruiting is the best component for that team to develop and hold a team together and minimize this turnover rate that we're seeing?
It's a good question. It's a good question. Let's talk TARS. I think let's.
Do we have to?
I know it's. I feel awful for the fact that we're talking about a side that was the big improvers last year, and currently they're sitting on 1-3, with a loss to the Hurricanes over the weekend, and also a loss to the Rebels the week before. Nathan, what's going on with the TARS? What is going on? Is it a case of the fact that it's a game plan or is it a fact that players are knackered? Because I will definitely say in that Hurricanes game, a lot of the stars like Hooper and stuff seemed pretty off the pace. Do you think or no?
I think it's a bit of everything in that. I think they're struggling to deal with expectation. Like, it was quite clear that the Brumbies defeat took a bit out of them. I think it's, again, I think we came in thinking they were going to roll over a lot of teams, but when you look at that first 6 weeks, you know, outside the Jura and Rebels, there's two games against the Brumbies, a Hurricanes and Chiefs game. Like, that's a rough, rough start to a season. So they were always going to struggle. I think we just kind of put the blinders on and thought, okay, well, they were good enough to contend with teams last year. Surely they'll get better. Not realizing that every single team has made the exact same leap. I think they do. They've kind of gone with a more power over fitness game, and with the thought of our fitness will build into the season. It just hasn't yet. You know, you have guys looking a bit tired. You know, Michael Hooper looked tired on the weekend. He missed seven tackles.
Like, what about the message we sent each other specifically about that?
it's unbelievable. I think you have a combination of the young guys, second year syndrome having a little bit of effect, still trying to figure out who the best 10 is. There's a lot still going on, but, you know, it's a challenge for them. And realistically, I don't think it's as bad as you know, first laid out. I think realistically, they're probably, if they're at their form site, form peak, they probably still aren't beating the Hurricanes. The Rebels game changes, but I don't think they've beaten the Brumbies on both occasions, and they're probably not beating the Chiefs this week. So realistically, I think regardless, they're looking at a 2-from-6 start to the season. The joy of this competition is all you got to do is build. If you build form late for long enough, you can find yourself into a finals. Like, they've got enough talent. They've still got enough talent in there and enough pieces that are shining. You know, your Langy Gleasons of the world are looking like absolute killers. You know, Max Jorgensen lives up to the hype. Marky Mark is still an absolute weapon. Talani Sale, still, again, underrated signing for him. He just keeps trucking the ball over the advantage line. Like, there's good pieces there. It's just finding in these next couple of weeks, finding how it clicks, finding how it gets together, and then going on that late season run and just riding that momentum for the rest of the year. So it's not all hope is lost, but you've got to start seeing signs soon that there's at least that old, you know, the Leichhardt in the Waratahs come back. That team that was really pushing the Kiwis to the brink and throwing stuff at them they weren't expecting.
So you basically want to say not panic stations yet.
But we're pretty close. We're close, but we're not there yet. Because I know a lot of people are, you know, already writing this team off. They can't make the finals. They can't, you know, we've all overhyped and blah, blah, blah. It's just like, okay, let's just calm your horses, calm down. You know, again, as Josh knows, as a Red fan, it's a long season. Look at last year when they, for the best example of that. So, like, there's still time, but we need to see improvements in the next 2 weeks.
Do you think, Josh, do you think it's realistic that the Tars can either provide that improvement either in – do you reckon, first of all, are they capable of winning either game against either the Chiefs or the Brumbies? Or is there enough in there, do you think, that we can start to say, even though the Tars are going to be 1-5 if they lose both these games – do you think there's enough there to be like, okay, I can see improvement coming in on the horizon, or do they have to win one? They've got to win one of these games.
Look, the Tars are upset kings when they want to be. They have the ability to pull off Houdini acts and look like a team that is built for the finals at that point. Whether or not that they can actually do that in the next two rounds, I'm not sure. I don't think it's panic stations yet. I really don't. I do agree with Nath on that. You know, we're balancing on the edge, teetering over the edge, whatever you want to call it these days. You know, we've got to be cautious and open-minded about it. But just to reaffirm what Nath said about taking the strength versus fitness approach, they have done that. And that was not designed in any way to reflect what their bloody draw was for this season. Because if you have fitness in the first six rounds and you can outrun and outplay from sheer determination, I think that they would easily have a 3-5 win in the first five rounds, right? Like, honestly, I just think that there's so many excuses still thrown around. You know, people, yes, we'll write them off now. Other people, they've got it in them 100%. But, you know, if the coach has got to go away and say, yeah, we lost, but, you know, the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come. Everyone's going to get sick of it, and everyone's going to go, well, when is the best coming? And that just puts unnecessary pressure on the players and the team. And the players cop it. We know that they do. But we just have to understand that, you know, the perspective from a coaching view, especially from my point of view, is that have they really prepared the team in the right way for their draw this year? And I don't think they have. I think there's lots of opportunities. Yes, they've had a few injuries. Yes, they've got a few more injuries. It's been an unfortunate weekend for the Waratahs in regards to that. I just think that the improvement has to show really, really quickly. And to be honest, if I'm going to say yes, that they're in the ability to utilize their end of season draw run to the finals, they have to win the next two or they won't have the heart. I just don't think they'll have the heart. I've never seen ever in the amount of time Michael Hooper has played rugby on TV, his head down, and his head was down this weekend. There was a moment where he ran and he was looking directly at the ground and not what was in front of him. And it was at that moment that I sent that message and asked what was going on, because that's just, you know, as a Wallaby fan, not so much the Waratahs, but as a Wallaby fan, you know, that's heartbreaking to see that someone of his caliber is at that point where he's not looking up, he's looking down. And I think that's something that shows that there's now a transitional period coming to the Waratahs as well. And I think it is with the Gleesons coming through, deciding, you know, if Donaldson or Tane, you know, or, you know, Will Harris coming back, who's the best 10? Who's the best 15? You know, who's got the ability to really cover these real spine factors of the team to really give them the best opportunity to get points? You know, silly decisions going for the corner when they should have taken three. You know, I guarantee that is common across the Australian teams right now, which is extremely infuriating. You know, the three's on offer. Please just take it quickly, reset and do the same thing. But yeah, I think that right now we're about to see the transition of the Waratahs. The new teams are coming through. The old heads are going to start to leave. And I think that's where we're at.
Yeah, it definitely Absolutely. Makes the next, you know, the remainder of the season quite interesting. And also, I think it's a real challenge for DC. This is the moment where, because you know, up until this point he's done MLR, he's done Shoot Shield, he's done NRC and had success at all of them. But this is the real test for him and his coaching caliber, because if his conditioning and preparation for the season hasn't gone to plan, and by the sounds of it, according to you, Josh, it hasn't. This is the real moment of, well, how do you adapt not only to creating a game plan for this side to make them start again, but also if you're dealing with a situation of a changing of the guard in the squad, which was inevitable that it was going to happen. But the fact that you'd at least be hoping that, okay, the team is still at least firing in this particular situation. Yeah. It's a double challenge.
It is. I think DC's kind of been given a double-edged sword. Like, it is the changing of the guard. It is the underdog story. There was a lot of smoke blown up about what they can do this season. Like, there was a lot of talk about it. You know, I think the pressure's on him a lot, and whether that pressure's resonating within the training, within the coaching, or just within the standard deliverance to the team, we don't know. But I will applaud him at all times. He's always got the team's best interest at heart in the sense of always backing his players first. Like, he has never been one to shy away from a battle or a conversation regarding his team and how much he believes in them and what they can do. And I think that's what's going to be needed. There needs to be no quick decisions on DC. He 100% needs to be in here for another three seasons, like a real good opportunity to really develop and build a team around his style of coaching that are really ready to be molded into his previously successful coaching career. Like, he needs to get that ability. And then from there, you know what, early shout out 2025 Waratahs for the premiership, right? Early shout out, like,
yeah, yeah, but you can see it.
You are slinging it this evening.
I want our listeners to come back and say you're a wanker. I don't believe you, but give me a good conversation about it, right? Mm. But let's actually try and engage that perspective. And I think they have it. They do have it there. Like, I've got plenty of friends, ex staff that I've had the pleasure to coach with in Shoot Shield. I see some of the players that are on the brink of getting that next step in, you know, into Super Rugby or avenues into sevens and all these factors. There is such an amazing group of players ready to come through. There really is. And that's across the entirety of this sort of platform of Premiership, Shoot Shield, all of those sort of levels. And I just think that DC is going to reap the rewards of this over the next two seasons. And I think once he gets that caliber of player and they open up, you know, the old, we can trust everyone from every part of New South Wales to join the team, like that they will then be able to really move forward. You know, like I've got a shout out. There's a young fella, Birdie, who plays for West Harbour Pirates. And that young fella is West Harbour Pirates junior. He's made the junior Wallaby squad a hooker.
Birdie Alcock.
So, mate, Birdie's a legend. Do you know what he did on the trial the last weekend? He played first grade starting hooker against Hunter Wildfires.
Jeez.
And I believe he's just done the same again against the Two Blues. So, like, you know, this young fella, like young fella who's still developing into his body, like, you know, if I was anything to say, maybe a bit biased because I love the kid and I've coached with him before, but, you know, there is a hooker there that is still a teenager that could be sincerely developed, put on a training contract, and in the next couple of years ready to rock and roll. Like easily able to slide into that caliber with the correct development.
Hmm.
And I think that's something that, you know, we need to start looking at and harnessing, and the Waratahs will reap the reward of this if they can do it, right? If there's not enough shackles, if there's not of the old comments that we won't get into and cause a stir on social media, you know, we just want to make sure that's available for them. But yeah, I can see it. I can definitely see it. I just don't shoot them too early now. See what they can pull out. Next two for the win, I trust them for the season. If they can't pull it off, and one of them, I have an inkling of a feeling, you know, the Brumbies might take them to the sword.
Mm. Well, on that note, I reckon, and also on the note of developing talent and positive things, let's finish this deep dive into the Super Rugby teams with the Brumbies, who, as of us talking, are still undefeated, second on the ladder, coming off a very dogged win over the Reds in Canberra, and then following it up with, as mentioned, a 14-try, nearly 100-points tri-fest of sheer pure entertainment bliss against Moana Pacifica. Josh, I'm going to throw it to you first to be kind to you. I'll give you a nice pass. You can take this one first. How are we feeling about the Brumbies right now? Do we think, is this a step up from McKellar's last season with Larkham, or do we think that it's what are our thoughts? What are our thoughts of where the Brumbies are at?
They've been given an amazing set piece fundamental development for a club. They've got such amazing foundations at these set pieces that they can incorporate, and they're building every player that's coming through the ranks into those set pieces. And now you throw Larkham in, who just absolutely loves to play with flair and attack and does all these beautiful, majestic attacking rugby and running rugby moves. The Brumbies are the complete package this season. Absolutely. I think that there is, I was saying it earlier, they play the tempo of the game that's put in front of them, and they deal with what's happening, right? They deal with the tri-fest. They deal with the back and forth points change. They handle it. Then they beat the team they're versing into submission, get back to their structure, and they close out the game. Brumbies for the Premiership, holding the plate, absolutely nailing it this season. I can 100% see that. I can 100% see it. I don't think that they really have the ability to lose from themselves. It's just going to be a better team that beats them this season.
Hmm.
I think the case of the Brumbies, it's not just 1-23. It's the depth that they're building behind everyone as well. It's your Reece Van Neck of the world, your Blake Shops, your Ryan Lonigan has become almost undeniably a selection for this July Rugby Championship. You know, Tamati Tuai comes off, you know, wasn't expected to play last week when Lenny Katao went down, comes in, delivers a blinder. You know, Ben O'Donnell off the bench is quality. You know, it's just the guys around the established stars that are really, you know, have lifted another level and just creating a real competition for spots. Like, you even have guys like Tom Hooper's on the sideline still. I think he's injured for the majority of the season, but he was one of the best players last year, and he can't even get a run in, or wouldn't be able to get a run in, such as the form. Billy Pollard's sort of come back in, such as their depth. Like, it's remarkable what they've built down there, and it's just there's a confidence that Larkham's built in this side. There's a real confidence, but an unselfishness that, you know, no one's bigger than the team. Everyone has to play a role. You know, and you see that with that, the rotation of the halves is the best sign of that. You know, the first 2 weeks was Alessio and White coming on his finishes. Now it's Debrasini who, you know, is delivering on the potential that we saw in him all those years ago. And Lonergan closing out games. You know, Tom Wright looks like is by far, I reckon, the favourite for that Wallabies 15 jersey at this stage. If the game was tomorrow, he's probably first pick there. Like, there's just so much to like about it. And, you know, all whilst having one of the hardest draws to start a year that I can remember a team having. Like, they've got Crusaders next week into Brumbies and Reds. Like, for a first 7 weeks, you're playing your two biggest Australian rivals twice. The two finalists last year's two finalists, and much improved Minor Pacifica. Like, that's I think that is the hardest draw out there for any team to start a season. They're 4-0. Like, it's just incredible what they've built down there.
And I want to add to that as well. If I look at the back line now, and then you also look at the reserves that are coming on, a lot of these players have experience in like high level, high pressure situations. Like, you know, look, Corey Toole playing the Australian Sevens, O'Donnell, Australian Sevens, Muirhead's had his crack, Tom Wright's had his crack, Nick White, you know, Cheeky White, absolute niggler, but he knows rugby laws back to front. He knows things that the standard person doesn't understand, and they question why he does it, but they're amazing at it. And, you know, there's just that sheer agreement within every grouping in the halves or in the forwards, and every single reserve application and time applied of that player coming on to replace the next player is a fine art. They 100% have down pat.
My question is, though, off the back of this, I think this Crusaders game coming up in Christchurch, which I can't remember the last time the Brumbies have won in Christchurch, but they have come close a lot of times. Nathan, I can see you're doing the numbers for me on that one. But can this Brumbies team get better? Because I have a feeling after that Moana Pacifica game, even though they played to the opposition, I got a feeling that there was more left in the tank. Do we think they can build off this and get better?
Oh, definitely. But they have not peaked yet. Like, they are. So 2000 was the last time they won in Christchurch.
2000?
Like, they're still
20 years ago. Are you kidding me?
23 years, apparently. Unless I've missed one in between, that's the quick Google is. So I might be wrong, but they're not a complete package yet. You know, they still conceded 36 points to Minor. The defensive maul was average, probably below average of their standards with the amount of tries they conceded through there. It's still not a polished performance yet, but, you know, they've just got enough class and enough understandings of their strengths and how to grind out each opponent. They're just getting the job done. So I don't think they're probably closer finished package, but there's still levels to go, which is encouraging.
Yeah, I agree with that. Josh, what are your thoughts? Do you think this is a? Do you think we'll? I mean, you've just said that you think that the Brums are going to win it. You think they can do better?
100%. I do. I think they can do better, but I think Nathan nailed it when you said they can grind it. I think that the challenge that the Brumbies have with their getting better, as we're calling it, I think it's really the fact that they shouldn't have to grind out. I think that needs to be nailed earlier on. That's the first 30, you know, and then the 10 minutes either side of the half. And then it's their game to hold. It's not their game to grind out and have to put all the efforts in. The last 30, they're really just going, cool, this is how the Brumbies play. Guess what? You're going to lose. We've nailed it. It's in the bag. Finish on a high. Minimal mistakes, minimal disciplinary issues. Move on. Let's get ready for next round. I think that's where they need to get instead of having to grind it out. That's just, you know, a humble man's opinion.
It definitely, they are the standouts by a long way. We mentioned it at the top of the pod, and it is clear that they are the team from an Australian perspective to watch. And I guarantee Eddie Jones will probably be looking at that squad and saying, there is so much to pull from here when he puts together his squad for this year. There's a lot to look at. We've talked a lot of Super Rugby. I reckon it's time to throw it out to some wider other rugby's happening as well. You almost forget about it sometimes, but there is in fact other rugby in other parts of the world. And one of the things that did wrap up recently, which was the Six Nations, with Ireland claiming the Grand Slam following a win over England in Dublin over the weekend. France finished off by polishing off Wales. Scotland also finished by knocking off Italy. The question I want to pose to you gentlemen, first and foremost, Nathan, I'll throw to you. Do we think that Ireland is legitimately a World Cup contender, or are they going to get knocked down in the quarterfinals yet again?
Oh, it's so tough to tell. Like, Ireland, the thing is, Ireland or Ireland, they just find a way to do it. Like, that's the problem. Like, every, you know, this feels like a broken record. Like, they come in looking like absolute world beaters, you know, one of the best teams in the world, and just find a way to blow it in a World Cup. And their draw is ridiculous. Like, they've got a pool with South Africa and Scotland. Like, that's no guarantee to get out of. But this has to be
They shouldn't be worried about Scotland.
I mean, Scotland look good. Scotland, but like this has to be, in saying that, I do agree. This has to be their year to get out and further. Like, they just dominated every opponent. They looked really good. Particularly, again, gotta love when they beat England as well. It was nice. On St. Paddy's Day, nonetheless, just chef's kiss.
God help any team that plays Ireland in Dublin on St. Paddy's Day. Just, and particularly the English. Just God help them. Like, they were never going to win that game.
But yeah, they've got to enter as World Cup favourites, and I don't see how they, you know, knock on wood. I don't see how they don't go, you know, into at least the semi final, if not the final, pretty comfortably.
It's a pity that they can't mathematically play France, can they, in the final, can they? The closest they'll meet is quarters or semis, isn't it? There's no way they can play France in the final, can they?
I'm pretty sure they can.
They can?
I think if both teams finish first, then there's a chance.
Because one gets the game off, don't they?
Basically. If both teams win their pools, then in the semifinals they then play. So I say Ireland win their pool, they would then play the winner of Pool C, which is likely us, and then France would play the winner of Pool D, probably England. So there's 100% chance it could be an Ireland France final if both teams finish in the exact same spot in their respective pools.
Hmm.
Oh, imagine a France World Cup final in France, like, oh, that'd be a party I'd like to be a part of.
That'd be insane.
Oh, it would be.
Yeah, it is looking like such an exciting World Cup. I think this is probably the World Cup that is probably the most. I mean, we were saying this in 2019, but it does feel like this World Cup is genuinely open to a whole bunch of sides. Like, you couldn't say yes, Ireland and France are looking good, but South Africa have the potential to knock either of those teams off. New Zealand can on a good day. Even the Wallabies have really challenged both sides respectively in the last couple of times that they've gone up against them. So it's so exciting. Who are the other standout teams from the Six Nations in your opinion? Josh, I'll throw to you. Who are the other teams that you looked at and went, okay, they look like they've taken some steps forward?
Italy.
Yeah,
I don't think we really need to have that discussion. Like, dear God, like, how good are their improvements? Even their attacking defensive structure, standard rugby applications, they're putting people to the test. Like, they're putting the other teams to the test and saying, actually, you know what? No, this isn't going to be 40 points. We're going to have a crack. We're going to make sure you really have to put yourself into a position to win this game. And I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, there was a part of me that would say that Italy is definitely. I can't remember the article the other day I read. and someone wrote that Wales is a tier two nation now, and they put Italy above Wales. And you know what? I agree. I think that's where they stand. I think it's a very no. You know what? I see you bobbing around there, Nathan. Going, I'm
they
not
beat,
sure.
They beat Wales. Beat them.
Like, yeah, but I don't. But as a team, in consistency, development, improvement, right now at this stage, I would love to see Italy and Wales, and I reckon Italy would come out on top. Like, I think they're just at that position now where, whilst yes, they're losing, but they're not losing like they used to. They've just improved to such a significant rate that they are now in contention for other factors. And I think that's who's my standout is for the Six Nation. I also had a dream team question the other day about who my dream half pairing, so nine half pairing for starters and finishers would be. And I just, you know, I just want to see a bit of Sexton and DuPont and see what kind of babies those two make. Like, dear God.
Sexpont.
Oh, Sexpont. That's it. It's my new slogan. Boys, change my name now. It's like, just could you imagine them in a dual team? Like well, let's create the old school all-stars team. Let's get Sexpont. Let's get an absolute world-class team together where we just nominate the best and they do an absolute world tour. Let's build rugby again across the globe and see what we can create. I know it's a little bit off track, gentlemen, but I think that's definitely something that we could see and get behind.
I was going to say, I don't think Wales are at Italy's level yet, but I reckon if you give them 24, I don't know, 24, I reckon even 12 months are probably there, given how well their under 20s are going at the moment. Like, they're definitely two teams going the completely other, maybe obviously to trajectories. Jeez, can't pronounce that this night, far out. But yeah, I completely agree. Italy are your big improvers. Like, they are generally, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we were thinking, well, should South Africa take their spot? Like, are they really worth it as a Six Nation? But they're genuine, like, they've been genuine competitors over this, say, 5-6 week tournament. Like, I've been impressed by them. So, you know, if you're looking for a team that really could, you know, cause a bit of an upset heading into the World Cup, look no further than Italy. Like, I think the pool, sure, their pool sucks in the sense of who they've been drawn against in New Zealand and France. But again, on their day, they could shock either of them.
We watched Japan beat South Africa. Okay. I'm just putting it out there. Italy versus beat New Zealand. Italy beat France. Winner of the pool.
Anything's possible.
I'm loving your
bold. I'll take that breathalyzer now, gentlemen.
Yeah, Josh's bold prediction pod. That's where we're at. Complete.
The breathalyzer pod.
The breathalyzer, the full sex pod. So from one Six Nations to another, let's finish off by talking about a comp that's kicking off this weekend, the Women's Six Nations, which is looking super exciting. By last count, I was hearing from Stella Mills, our kind of routine, Red Roses guaranteed correspondent on Twitter. She's been talking about a lot of the numbers and the excitement building up around this particular Six Nations. Apparently, they're not far. They're doing the numbers for the France England game, which is at the end of this Six Nations, is numbering over 40,000 tickets sold at Twickenham, and right now, which would be putting it up there as a challenger for the World Cup final last year. The crowd numbers that they got there for that final. Boys, who do we think is going to win this Women's Six Nations, and is it not going to be England, is more the question I want to ask. Do we think that France in particular is going to pose a big legitimate threat?
England. It has to be them.
Yeah, it has to be England.
Like, they are ruthless. They are dominant. Like, I got a first-hand view of it in that quarterfinal in Auckland. They're just, man, absolute killers from 1 to 23. They just have so much class. They dominate you in every single aspect of the game. Like, sure, France pushed New Zealand all the way, and, you know, we're close to setting up that England-France final, but, like, England are just so much more dominant than everyone else. You know, yes, they got pushed in that World Cup, but when you see what's going to come down to that last game at Twickenham, out of all places, they're going to rise to the occasion. And, like, it's going to take an absolute A-plus, 12 out of 10 performance by France to knock them off. Because let's face it, that final game is what's going to decide it. So, but England is just going to be too good, in my opinion.
Clinical. The word there is clinical. Oh, they're just absolutely too clinical at everything that they do. But it's very rare that you see a team have next to no gaps in their game. But, you know, those girls really have next to no gaps. Like, the gaps that they have are self-inflicted during the games where they make a mistake. A lot of them are handling errors, which is common in that sort of development area there. But holy crap, how beautiful were they in the World Cup? Mm. You know, and I'm not English in any capacity. My wife is. My wife's a Pom, and she 100% absolutely thinks that that's the best thing since sliced bread. That's the first time I've watched an England game and actually barracked for England in any capacity.
Now we need to stop. Pod needs to stop. Okay, we need a timeout. Too many bold claims being made.
It's not a bold claim. It was a simple just watch. They're just clinical. And I think that's the point that, you know, that they will smother the other teams and they will come out on top undefeated.
I completely agree.
Yeah. It's still going to be a fascinating tournament to watch. And I think particularly in the last couple of years the Women's Six Nations is really starting to carve out. It's reaching that point where it's transcending into that fully professional space and being seen as a legitimate entertainment product on its own terms. It's fantastic. I think it's really great as well that they're no longer doing, you know, having them run concurrently. Each competition is given its own time to shine. Has been such a huge positive just for women's rugby, but also for the rise of all those teams. I'm really excited. Similarly to what we were talking about with the men's Six Nations, I'm really excited to see how Italy go in this women's Six Nations because they're currently ranked above Australia in the world rankings. They were the first team, you know, first rugby Italian rugby team to actually make quarterfinals in any form in a World Cup last year. And they've proven themselves to be really, really, really competitive against a lot of tough opposition. So they're the big improvers who I'm quite excited to watch this year.
Agreed. I'm just to throw a name out for those interested. If you want to follow the Italy team, look at Patrice Ragone. Absolute, just pulls off some bonkers shit for the Italians. Like, it's one of those people. If you're looking for a player to watch this Women's Six Nations, check her out.
I mean, just watch them all, but especially watch her.
Yeah.
I'm aware that we've been rattling on a little while, so we'll finish off back home, staying with women's rugby. There is a certain competition kicking off this weekend as well, and that is the Super W, which is back once again for another season. And it's a particularly exciting season. I'm looking forward to this one because we've got the Fijiana Drua defending their title. We've got the Waratahs, we've got Force, Brumbies, Rebels, Reds, all back once again for another season. And particularly off the back of, you know, the promising signs that we had last year at the World Cup with the Wallaroos and the performances that they had. I think, you know, and we do know that there's more Wallaroos tests coming this year as well, which looks really exciting. So let's break down this comp really quickly. Let's talk about the players who are really excited to watch. And do we think Fijiana will go back to back, Josh?
Look, I think that they've definitely got the strength to do it and the players to do it. I think they really harness the epitome last year of what it was to really emphasize women's rugby and push through and show the skill set. So do I think they can do it? Yes. Do I want them to do it? No. That's a big difference. I've actually got it's a very contradictory thing here for me, but I'm actually going to be supporting the Waratahs women this season. And there's a specific reason for it though. I've got a soft spot for their winger, Jacinta Windsor. So I'm going to give her a shout out right now. I thought I'd get a plug in quickly for her. I had the pleasure of meeting her and coaching her, in Bathurst, and she's worked her absolute ringer off to get in any way, shape, or form in contention with this area, and she's had an absolute blinder through the trials. She's in a position, I think, that she's definitely going to show her true colours and abilities. So I'm going to follow the women's Waratahs team this season. It does irk me a little bit because I'm still a Reds fanatic. Boys, I'll stay with you there. Don't stress.
Join the dark side. Join the dark side. Join the dark side. Join the dark side. I generally reckon Waratahs, this is their bounce back year. Like, I think Fijiana Drua have lost a lot of players. I think there's only 9 coming back from that Super W winning side. I think a lot of the Waratahs have lost some players as well, but again, I think they've got the depth to back it up. I can say quick, outside of Jacinta, quick five players to watch. Brumbies, Amy Rule, somehow got the Blackburn starting prop to play for the Brumbies this year. Like, that's an incredible signing for them. And just going to add to that forward depth as they start their campaign in Fiji. Rebels, Mia Ray Clifford has come over from AFLW, apparently absolutely killing them and looks to be kind of one of their main threats in a much improved Rebel side. Waratahs, who did I pick out? Waratahs. I've got Ella Ryan, stick of the back line. Again, center that just keeps getting better and better, probably plays 12 for him, is an absolute menace in defense. Reds, go Mel Wilkes, someone who's just off the Wallaroos selection last year, just missed out in the Wallaroos squad. Center, played really well for Bond during that club championships and expecting just the absolute liver. And then finally, again, Western Force signed a lot of international players, but the one I'm interested in seeing is Mac Leonard coming back from England. She's coming back from Harlequins, I believe. No, Exeter. She's coming back from Exeter. Having spent, you know, a couple months over there, it's going to be interesting to see just how she gets better and better. And, you know, there's a couple of Japanese signings there as well that can add quality, but Mac going over there just adds so much experience to a forward pack, which, again, desperately needs it. And with all the investment the Force have put into it, they seriously need results. But I think the trophy comes back to New South Wales. For a rapid 3-minute preview there.
I appreciate that. And I will finish off by saying, do we think that the Western Force, off the back of all of that recruitment that we've been hearing about, do we think they're the real wild cards? Because, I mean, up until this point, we can argue that a lot of the Super W has been, you know, Tars, Fijiana, and the Reds have kind of been leading the pack. Do we think that this year we're going to see a big investment, a big kind of jump in some of those chasing teams? Because I know we've talked about, Nathan, I know you've talked about the Rebels for a little while, that they've really been developing a solid squad down there in Melbourne. Also, a lot of local girls who've all come up through Victorian rugby. Force throwing sheer talent and recruitment at it. Do we see those sides potentially sneaking a surprise couple of wins this year as well? Or do we think it's still going to be it's still going to be the Reds, Tars, and Drua leading the charge?
Yeah, I think it's still those three teams. I think the Reds have too much Wallaroos quality still in that squad. Likewise with Waratahs and Drua. That fourth spot's going to be interesting, though. Like, Brumbies still have quality in Pessy Palu, Grace Kemp, Tanya Naden, all, you know, quality pieces. As I kind of mentioned, Force have signed really well. Rebels are slowly starting to build a squad as well. So it's going to be that battle for fourth is going to be interesting. So I think, yeah, it's a coin flip between Brumbies and Force getting that fourth spot. It's going to be really interesting to see how the Force gel and kind of, you know, get themselves into a season. But, you know, Brumbies might not have the names, but under Scott Favour, he's quietly confident that, speaking to him at the CMW launch, he's quietly confident he's got a couple of young players that can really break out in this year.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, we've been talking a while. It's a lot of rugby's currently in form right now, but you know, it's a wonderful time to be a fan. So this weekend, as mentioned, the Super W will be kicking off. The New South Wales Waratahs will be playing the Western Force. The Fijiana Drua will be playing the Brumbies in Fiji, and then the Melbourne Rebels will be hosting Queensland Reds all this weekend in round one of Super W. Meanwhile, over in Super Rugby, we've got the Crusaders up against the Brumbies. The Waratahs will be hosting the Chiefs in Sydney. Highlanders will be taking on the Drua. Moana Pacifica will welcome Hurricanes in Auckland. The Rebels will take on the Reds at Amy Park. And then last of all, the Blues welcome the Western Force at Eden Park, which I think we're all a bit worried about that one. So do we want to give some final thoughts and final predictions on who we think is going to win across those games? Josh, I know we're all in agreement that Crusaders-Brumbies game is just going to be the game to watch. This weekend, who do we think is taking home the Chockies?
I've said it before. It's okay. The Brumbies undefeated. The Brumbies are going through to win. My backing's on a 10-plus win.
In Christchurch?
In Christchurch, 100%. They have the ability. We all know their structure. They've now got the attacking flair. They've got great rugby brain mentality across the entire team. Bench, starting, doesn't matter. I think definitely 10-plus win Brumbies.
I can get behind that. I think the Crusaders are, I think they're, was it 3-2? So 2-2. I think even that probably is a bit generous for them, given they were very lucky to get away with that win against the Blues, who had to go down to 13 at one point. I think the Brumbies are clicking, and this is the time to make a statement. I think this is, they come away with a win and all of a sudden get people talking about them as a real title contender.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think now's the time. This is a game that, you know, I really hope the Christchurch faithful turn up for it, because it's going to be an absolute beauty. And I think the Brumbies have it in them to win it. Do we think the Tars have any hope against the Chiefs?
They relish being the underdog, but geez, that Chiefs side's too good. Mm. I reckon they'll keep it close, but Chiefs get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be close. I think the Chiefs are going to blow them out of the water in the last 20. I just think it's going to be one of those unfortunate close games up to that last 20 minutes, and then bye-bye.
Mm. Rebels-Reds, do we see the Rebels getting back to winning ways, or do we see the Reds?
Shush, everyone be quiet. Reds, that's it.
Blunt but effective, I agree. I also think, you know, when I was reviewing Reds draw, I kind of said styles make fights. I think the Reds play a style of rugby that really disrupts the Rebels. Mm. I think they'll have a point to prove with essentially Tony Altuba heading down there just to kind of give the reminder of, is this what you're going through? Really just trying to kind of, particularly when there was a little kind of bad blood with Hamish Stewart as well. Remember that was supposed, that's where he was supposed to go before. They kind of released that statement saying, oh, we're not happy about this. They've gone about this the wrong way. I think Brad Thorne would get the proper siege mentality in there, and they'll come out and really perform.
It'd be an interesting one to watch. I think the Rebels have got something that might actually be able to spring a surprise here, considering their form. And right now, I do think Carter Gordon is outperforming O'Connor on the field right now, and I think that's going to pop that.
If O'Connor starts this week, I'm going to cry.
He's starting this week, 100%.
Well, obviously, boys, I'll take a photo of the tears dripping down my face. I don't think he should start. I don't think he's returned enough. And, I do, though. I actually have a weird gut feeling, because I did pick a few of the upsets last week. But I have a gut feeling that Carter Gordon might get the first try scorer this week.
I just read the script.
Yeah, I just see it that he's just going to absolutely do some tomfoolery around that 10-12. And maybe burn O'Connor, especially if he starts for speed and under the posts in the 22. I just think that there's just something there about him that he just controls and holds that defense. You know, and everyone's wary of him. He's my number one pick for Wallabies starting 10 right now. Absolutely. I think give him the stick and let him beat the shit out of the other teams.
Love it. I'm loving this Josh Murphy crystal ball prediction. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Hey, if I keep getting it right, people are going to start asking me more and more. So let's just keep it to here, okay, guys? Just that's enough.
You can't give too much right away, otherwise they're going to be on to you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, man. And then last of all, again, similar to the Tars and Chiefs, do the Force have a hope in hell here in Auckland?
I mean, if the Blues rest a lot of their players, which I think they have to at some point, maybe, yeah. Is it likely to happen? Probably not. Like, they're just... The Blues are going to come out hurting after last week's defeat and really have the firepower that all they need is 10 minutes and they can blow away teams. And they could potentially do that to the Force this week.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm not seeing anything right now in this in what the Force have delivered such thus far that could potentially reverse that. There is growth and development coming through, but just they're not at the same level as the Blues right now. Josh, you any disagreement with that, or are you pretty much on the same page?
Oh, how could you disagree with that?
No.
You know, high chance the Blues might now get the fastest try scored in Super Rugby Pacific. But, you know, it's – I don't know. I think that I don't think the first 20 – will have many points in it. I actually think that they will give them a real good run in the first 20. Second 20, blown out. Come back after halftime, maybe one or two quick tries. Blues will just own it from there, and that'll be the end of it. See you later.
15-20.
Yeah, actually, I think it's going to be worse than that, to be honest. I think if the Blues really come out with intent, like I'm thinking we're seeing that red score.
What, you mean like a 20-71?
Yeah, I do. You can just see it. Like, you know, the Blues are renowned for when they're on song, they can put four or five tries on in 10 minutes. Absolutely. I just feel that there's just going to be some form of catalyst, some form of event that's just going to implode, and the Blues are just going to go, thank you very much, and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. But hey, we might turn up in 2 weeks with egg on our face. It's a strange game, rugby union. It's a strange game. All right, lads. I think we're done for the evening. He's been a long one, but he's been a fun one. Thank you, Natho. Thank you, Josh. Thank you to all of our listeners. We appreciate you coming out here to the Tolly Latu safe space. We hope that you are feeling safe and feeling happy. We hope you enjoy your rugby this weekend, and we'll catch you the next time around.
Yeah, I think that's a really silly question. You know, rugby's a game of 15 players on the field. When we're attacking weak defenders. We're looking for weak defenders. Why would we run at the strongest defenders? So if Martin's there and sorry, what's your name? Nick, and Nick's there, we're not going to run to Martin, are we?
'Guys, can you just send my best wishes to Warren? Make sure he enjoys the third and fourth playoff.